This is reel two of three reels interviewing Mrs. Esther Hall in Central Alaska in August of 1973. She visits in Central in the summers and visits in Fairbanks in the summers also. Spends her winters in Sacramento.
But you were married then in Anchorage in 1922.
Yes, and then went into Nenana.
Yeah. And Dixie was working for the railroad. For the railroad.
Yes, he was roadmaster's clerk for the railroad.
Did everyone call him Dixie?
Always. You see, that name was given him coming up on the boat when he came. He was from Missouri, and he went in the social hall, you know, everybody gathered. He said, well, what are you all doing in here? I don't know if you knew Dixie, but he was sort of a very outgoing kind of a person.
Yeah.
And some woman said, oh, you're from Dixie. We'll call you Dixie. And that name was tacked on him, and he never lost it.
Yeah.
In fact, I think most of the men that worked with Dixie didn't even know what he had.
Where he got the name?
They always call me Mrs. Dixie. And I don't think they ever knew he had any other name besides Dixie Hall.
Yeah. He was a very popular person in Fairbanks.
Well, he was quite a person. I don't take this, but I always... All right.
We were talking about... the 50th anniversary of the driving of the Golden Spike, and I'm sorry that you weren't invited to that.
Well, I should have been, you know, aware of it.
Should have just gone.
I wasn't
invited either, but I went.
Good for you, Mike.
I just got in my car and drove down, and I thought for historical purposes that
I would like to take it. Yeah.
And to photograph it, and
mm-hmm.
that's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I had, I sat up on the high perch, way up on the bank, and just sat up there and took pictures, and
good.
I had the best seat in the... I had the best gallery seat. But you were there, we were just talking just a little bit ago about 1923 when President Harding came in.
Yeah.
And you described the band that Cap...
Cap Jones. They call him Hurry Up Jones. That was another
Hurry
one.
Up
Hurry
Jones.
Up Jones. Because he was one of these men that pushed his man
Is that right?
to get through. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. But he organized the band.
He organized the band.
Yeah. Was he the conductor?
Well, he trained them. I don't know what you'd call him exactly, but I guess he was.
That's what
he was.
So the band then was made up of just people who lived in Nenana.
And who had at one time in their lives played an instrument. And they were very elderly men.
I can imagine what you're talking about, because I played the violin one time, about 4-year period. I couldn't play a violin now.
Well, you can imagine what these old fellows picked up those guys. It really was... Now, as I say, I wonder what he thought after he'd been there. You know?
Yeah, mm-hmm. he probably appreciated.
Well,
you know, a person like someone who, you know, in high office,
yes.
like the presidency or any official, appreciates the effort that a small community goes to
to put on
an affair.
Yes.
And on the 15th of July this year, Nenana did a marvelous job.
Wow.
Nenana's a small little place now, and it's, you know, it used to be a big town, but
yes.
now it's just a small, looks like a little village if you
I
go
know,
by.
I know, sort of sad when you go
50 miles
it.
An hour,
yes.
you know, going on the way to Anchorage. But they have a good community spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a nice program where the original Spike was driven. Then they came over the other side and had a program at the depot. And they had erected a plaque and a monument. The monument's high.
Mm-hmm.
And the mayor of Nenana is Jack Coghill.
Oh, yes.
And he said the reason for that, now people are going to think in the future we may be a little crazy or something, but the reason that the monument is as high as it is we want you to know how high the water was in 1967.
Oh.
So the top of the stone monument is the height of the water through that community.
Well, that was quite a thing
so,
to really think about.
Oh, that was
yes,
an
the
interesting sight.
The family, I guess, are the only family I know of the old families that are left down there.
Mm-hmm. I talked to Mrs. Winifred Coghill
yes,
recently.
Yes, the mother. Uh-huh.
And she said she had missed that in the 1923
oh, she
visit
wasn't
because
there.
She was in England having her
That's
son,
right.
Bill.
Bill was the oldest one,
mm-hmm.
yes. Uh-huh.
But anyway, you were living there in Nenana then, and you remained in Nenana for quite a number
until
of years.
Until 1929. Or? We lived there 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, we had 2 sons.
And what were their names?
Robert Lee Hall and John B. Hall, John Barbie Hall, after his father.
And they both live in Fairbanks.
Just John.
John lives there.
Yes, and Robert lives in Sacramento. That's how I have to be there.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. You just have the two children?
Yes, two mm-hmm. sons. Uh-huh.
And when you left then in 1929, did you go to Fairbanks?
No, that's when we went to Bethel and mm-hmm. spent our 4 years in Bethel.
You weren't working for the railroad there?
No, in the NC Company.
NC Company.
Yes, mm-hmm. Vicks was gone, and he was the agent down there.
The NC agent.
And and it, of course it's on that tundra country. The country yes. itself is very uninteresting, as you know. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I always appreciated, we used to have, I don't know what the plural of mirage is, but mirages, if you can call mm-hmm. it. And you'd see the most beautiful stream with trees or mountains, you know, and then you'd realize that it just couldn't be a mirage. And as Dick used to travel annually down to Nelson Island and those little places on the Bering Sea coast, because they had a couple of three trading posts down there, and he went to check them. And he traveled entirely by dog team in the winter, of course. There were no planes. And he always had a compass. You always had a compass on your dog team because, you see, you get out in that tundra, it's just like...
Flat. There are no landmarks.
But he said once in a while, way in the distance, they'd see what looked like, you'd think it was a village and trees or something. And he said it would just be a blade of grass, but the atmosphere down there, so it magnifies yes. things. Mm-hmm. And he said you'd get up to it and you'd be so surprised if anything yeah. there.
Right.
And so he...
Did he travel by himself, or did he normally have a dog
driver?
He
always had someone with him. Mm-hmm. And it's well, because it's dangerous. He said one night they got caught in a storm, and so this man, who was very experienced...
An Eskimo, probably.
Showed him, they crawl in under this sledge, you know. And he said, but unfortunately it froze, and if he'd been alone, he couldn't gotten out. He could have frozen to death because he was frozen in there, you know.
In his sleeping
robes? Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So he said it would be very dangerous not to have someone. And so he would go down and check the books and do things like that.
I see.
But it was quite mm-hmm. every year he had to do that.
Then you lived right in the village of Bethel?
Oh, yes, mm-hmm. right there. Mm-hmm. And the original village was our... much farther out, you see. The bank started to wash away the year we left, and there used to be a big island out there where the steamer would come to, and that island, they say, is completely gone, so it has changed a mm-hmm. lot. The river's washed yeah. it away. But it was a very small village. The Moravians had their mission there, as I do now, and they had brought in soil. See, there's no soil that you could grow on, and there are no rocks down there. That was always a strange thing.
It's just tundra.
Yeah, tundra. And they had gone up river and had soil brought down. So they had a greenhouse and raised a wonderful garden, and we could buy, in the summertime, we bought vegetables.
An outdoor garden, or was it?
Yes, outdoor garden, too. Mm-hmm. And then about twice a year, the reindeer were driven in, and we'd all get, you know, a reindeer, and the mission canned reindeer, some in gravy and some in sausage, so we always bought cases. Because we lived entirely out of canned, practically. Dix would have potatoes some of the year, or two boats a year.
You surely had fish.
And fish, yes. Mm-hmm. We had two boats a year came in from Seattle. The Tupper came in. It was just a small freight boat, and mm-hmm. it brought everything.
Was it the NC's ownership?
No, it was the Santa Clara. I think it's Santa Ana Steamship Company. Mm-hmm. And you left Seattle, and it took you about 9 days to get there, and you were on the ocean. They go directly out across yes, the ocean mm-hmm. and went through Unimak Pass. Then you went to the mouth of the Kuskokwim, where a small boat piloted you up the river in this ocean, a big ocean yeah. boat, you know. Mm-hmm. I think Bethel's 100 miles, about 100 miles inland by river. And it was so flat, you'd see the mass of that ship coming for miles before yeah. it reached there. And
you had two ships a year?
Two ships a year, mm-hmm. one in June and one in September. And so you had to order everything you wanted to have it come in on that fall boat. Otherwise, you just did without it.
Was it the Tupper that came each time? Or?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then I think after we left, I think another ship came. And then when the North Star was built for the BIA, it came in. But, of course, it just brought supplies for the BIA people.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the winter time, then, what did you do how did you get mail delivery?
By dog team. And mm-hmm. I forget how many weeks it took. I have six, but that sounds like an awful long time. And it came from Fairbanks.
From Fairbanks.
From the Fairbanks post
through
office.
McGrath.
Through McGrath and all through there, all down to Bethel.
Is that right?
And
do you remember any of the mail drivers?
No, I don't. I really don't remember them at all. I think that there was a time when I shouldn't say this because I won't say that because I don't know. I was thinking of Joe Jean, who afterwards started a trading post down at Good News Bay, but I just didn't remember. And I know Dixie took the Denver Post because he had been in Colorado before we came, so we took the daily Denver Post, so we'd get these mountains of paper, and we had the Sunday paper, and all the little Native boys and girls would come to our house to sit and read and look at the funny papers. They couldn't always read.
Is that right?
I took the rug up that was on the living room, put down the Congolian rug in those days, you know, because they'd come with their fur clothes, and you know, you just couldn't get it out of the carpet, but they loved to come. And we always read to our children, and many times they would come in and listen to the stories.
Is
you know,
it, yeah.
They loved it.
So, with what frequency did the dog team mail delivery?
Well, I think a 6 week stands in my mind.
Every 6 weeks.
Well, I'm not sure. Just how often?
It wasn't weekly.
No.
Uh-huh.
No, it wasn't, and. So we were all very happy when we were there when the first airplanes came in.
Were there other non-natives or Caucasian people living in Bethel at the time that
you
were there?
Well, the traders, and then the missionaries were there, and they were very fine people. Of course, the natives at that time, I guess, all went to the Moravian Church, Mike. There was no other church in there. In fact, you see, it was... That was the Moravian area, and then the Cathy people had their area on the river, you know. So, but afterward, they both moved in, so mm-hmm. the Cathy people moved in, which was fine. But anyway, it was an interesting. You go to church, and they'd wear their parkies. A lot of people thought, you know, the people would come just into the village, and if they went to church, the smell of their clothes, you know, bothered them, you know. But the native people came in their parkies, in their boots, and they had a choir. And they sang beautifully. They have nice voices,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very interesting life for us.
And how many years were you in?
We were there four.
Four years.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Tell me about your house. Was it a
frame
structure?
It was a frame structure.
Mm-hmm.
It was, but that country is very difficult. You can't keep your house straight. When I went there, the floor was so crooked, Mike. If you
because of the permafrost.
Permafrost.
Yeah.
And if you spilled water in the kitchen, it was down in the corner of the living room before you could catch it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So then that spring, Dix decided he'd better do something about it. So he had it straightened out. But it didn't last, you know. You had to keep at it.
You had to keep jacking.
Yes, and you had terrible storms down there from the coast, wind and rain.
Mm-hmm.
And it never had any paint on the front of your house. The house was painted yellow, as I remember, you know.
But the storm would keep the paint.
Yes, you couldn't keep it. And we had terrible storms. And the wood was all shipped down from upriver. There's no wood, of course, there. So.
Well, what did you use for heat?
Just wood. Had a furnace. Had a big tank stove down in the basement. Like
so your wood for your furnace would then be brought down the
Cushwick River? All on scows from up the river. Uh-huh.
And did the natives also use wood for heat? Or?
Yes, they did.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. But they would get one stick at a time. And they'd be out midnight cutting their wood, you know.
Yeah.
And, and they lived very much as they'd always lived.
Well, they lived more in sod. Did they use sod?
Well, there they
time?
Had just small. They were made out of
frame
boards. They did,
but
one room usually, and everybody lived in that one room. Everything went on in that one room. You know?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And very furniture wasn't too important. Their beds were just their skins
on the floor.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Now, when I first went to Barrow, and I went up there in 1950, a lot of the families still
yes.
lived like that.
Uh-huh.
But now it's. So much better.
You yes.
have natural gas up there, which is an unusual thing for an native village.
One of the interesting things out there, of course, the people like their seal oil.
Mm-hmm.
And every year, Dix would have to get a supply of seal oil. And so they bring it up from down the coast. and they turn the skin of the cilia, you know, and then the skin on the inside is the outside of the poke,
yeah.
And they fill that with the seal oil and tie the legs, you know, so that it can't leak out. And you had to have that tested. So there was one man in the village who tested the seal oil, and he would take a little. He'd open that one leg up and take some out. And by the time he'd get through, Mike, it just looked like the seal oil was oozing out of him, you know. But they
like a wine taste.
Yes, yes, to be the same idea.
Well, why did they test it?
To see if it was rancid. That's right. And then they put it in a big hole in the ground in water, mm-hmm. And that's where they kept it.
I see.
And they love their seal oil. In fact, I think of all the things they enjoyed eating, they'd take dried fish and dip it in the seal oil and suck it, you know.
Yeah, I see. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they did very much of that.
But did the natives there freeze or dry fish for winter use?
Dried fish, mm-hmm. Yes.
They'd catch it in the river?
Yes, they would, and dried it on racks.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And they use that, I expect, for dog food.
Yes, mostly. And everything. Uh-huh.
And for their own feed,
yes,
too.
Their own consumption, too.
Mm-hmm. Did they have ice cellars in the permafrost for freezing meat?
That, I never heard them say they did.
Mm-hmm.
Never. Huh. I know that the NC used to cut ice and had an ice house. I know mm-hmm. that. But I never heard of the native having they could have, for all mm-hmm. I know, but mm-hmm. I don't know.
Are there berries in that part of the country that they can harvest in the summer?
Very, very few. Yeah. No, very, very few.
But yeah. Your children were small then, and describe a typical day during the winter time with your children. They were must have been very small at that time.
Well, they were, no, they, well, let's see.
They were in school?
John started a school down there, and Robert was, I think they were about 4 and 6 when we went in there, and, they played out a great deal. Oh, when we went, there was a Japanese man working in the store who had worked for the man prior to the NC owned it, so Tony stayed, Tony Sumai, and his wife's name was Sarah, and I thought for a long time that Sarah was Japanese, you know, they look very much the Eskimo. I guess they say that originally they probably came across.
From the Orient.
And Sarah and Tony, like, Robert was a little blonde boy with big blue eyes, and of course they were delighted with him because he was looked different, you know. So Tony made the boys a sled, and then they had a dog, and so they had their dog sled, and then they gave them each, they gave the John a park he made out of the mink bellies, you know, and the boots to go with it.
Oh,
and then Robert, a white rabbit skin one with it, and just beautiful.
Oh, I bet they were cute.
Little parkies and outfits. And so the boys would be out, you know.
Playing outdoors.
Playing outdoors, yes. Uh-huh.
Just like the Eskimo children. They
played right with the Eskimo children, right?
Mm-hmm. And in the winter, they'd play out in the cold.
Yes, they did, just the same.
I've seen the outlying villages where they don't have the things we have in Fairbanks mm-hmm. for entertainment or the gymnasiums. They make their own fun.
There was nothing. They had fun just the same. And as I say, the children, you know, they really didn't know anything different.
Mm-hmm.
I know when we came up here, we showed them a picture of a little boy one day. And they'd been here long enough, and they said, well, Mother, he's so dark, you know. They just had never... So I can appreciate that children, as far as race, doesn't make any difference to children.
No, it doesn't.
And then there was a little slough outside of the house, outside just a few feet from... We lived right practically on the river, and in the summertime, the same Tony had built them a flat-bottom boat, and they loved it. They were on that slough in their little boat, and it wasn't deep enough that anything could happen, you know,
yeah.
And they had my most fun. Yeah. So they thoroughly enjoyed it, Bethel.
Yeah.
And then Robert found a dog that was starving to death. See, the natives would come in off the tundra, and if there was some dog that wasn't, I guess, giving good service, why, they'd tie it up under the warehouse, leave it to starve. So Robert brought this dog home. He was just a little boy, and he said, Mother, look at him, he can wag his tail. So he pushed him back and forth, you know, and so we let him keep, they named him Jack. And that dog turned out to be the nicest children's dog. Well, the next year the native came, and he wanted that dog back. He saw how nice and fat he was, so Dick said, I'll tell you, you just pay me for all the food I've given him. I'll give him back to you. But he didn't want him then, you see. He just thought, He said, you took my dog. Well, we didn't take it. He just left it there to die. He really did. Mm-hmm. But, no, the children had the nicest memories of their, in a little boyhood down there.
And then, do you remember, well, let's see, you said you went there about 1929.
Yes.
And lived there 4 years. So that must have been about 1933?
Yes, we came up here to Fairbanks in 1933.
So before 1933, while you were there in Bethel, was there any airplane that
yes.
came in?
Yes, then about the last, I think, probably 31 they came in there. And that was a wonderful, wonderful day.
Landing on floats?
On floats, in the slough, yes. Mm-hmm. And it didn't come regularly, but Al Munson was among the first that came. Noel Ween came. Matt Niemann came. A lot of those early, early day pilots. And later, who met several who became Pan Am pilots, you see. Mm-hmm. Harry Blunt came in. Frank Dorbant came in. Mm-hmm. And they had come up here with that first airplane outfit. I should remember the name of that, which later became Pan Am up here. That's what later started Pan Am.
Yeah, what was the name of that?
Pacific International Airlines.
Mm-hmm.
And they
mm-hmm.
came, several of those aviators had come up. Of course, Noel Ween had come up before that, because Noel came to Bethel, or came to Nenana, and as I say, put on this flying exhibition,
yes.
you know, and took the man up, you know, and so we knew him, but the rest of them were new to it, but they came. And there was really no place for them to stay, so they used to come to our house and stay and eat with us. And when there was no eating place, you know, so they used to eat with us. And so we knew them all very well and enjoyed. And it was nice to have them come, Mike, because, oh, they brought us news from, you know, other places.
Well, when you moved to Bethel, how did you get there with your family?
Well, I came in on the Tupper. I went outside to Seattle and came in on the Tupper. But Dix flew down there in a little open cockpit
plane in
1929, and it cost him $500 to go down there. That's what the airplane fare was in those years.
Yeah. Well, they probably had to charter the plane to take
you
there.
Yes, they did.
But then when you moved from there to Fairbanks, how did
you travel? Dixie flew up, and I didn't want to fly because they were discontinuing. They were discontinuing the service across the portage. There was a portage between the Kuskokwim and the Yukon River, and they were discontinuing that. So I wanted to make that trip. So we went up the Kuskokwim River as far as Aniak, I believe it was. And then we went up a little creek called Mud Creek, and actually that's what it was, Mike. Those boys who were on the boat got out and pulled that boat literally through the mud. And then we finally got a series of small creeks and lakes, and we came to the portage, and they pulled the boat over this portage by...
on a sled or...
Not a hoist, but whatever the men used.
Winch?
Winch. Mm-hmm. They winched that over. And we stayed at this place all night where they at the portage place. And there was a road commission man who used to come out from Fairbanks and sort of looked after the thing. And he persuaded us to stay in his cabin. So there was another woman and I and the children along with the men who were coming over. And... He wanted us to use his cooking utensils, so we did. So we fried some potatoes and fixed some food, you know. And when we put the potatoes out, he had never washed his frying pan, you know. And the mosquitoes. Here we had just a layer of dead mosquitoes on our fried potatoes. We didn't eat them, I'm quite sure. And so we stayed there that night. And then we crossed, several lakes and small streams. And then we stayed in some terrible old cabins, but we all had our sleeping bags, so we just, you know, put up with it. And we finally, there was this pastor. He was Greek Orthodox priest, and he was going over to Russian mission mm-hmm. on the Yukon. And so that's where we
you were headed for Russian mission?
Yes, for mm-hmm. and we finally reached there. And it was quite interesting. Before we got there, see, they were Russian mission, or Greek Orthodox religion at Russian mission. And I remember he stood up in the bow of the boat and blessed them all, and they all came to the beach. It was really quite impressive, you know. Mm-hmm. And they had a beautiful church there. I don't know if you've ever been there.
I've been to Russian yes. mission.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
They have a beautiful little
yes,
church.
Yes, uh-huh. And we stayed with Chris Bitch. He let us have he had a little museum place, and Mrs. Carlson and this trader's wife from Akiak, and I, he let us sleep in there because the boat wouldn't
what
be there.
What was his name, Chris?
Chris Bitch.
Bitch.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And he has since died, and he let us sleep there because we were there 2 days before the boat, the Yukon came up. That the Yukon that's parked there at Alaska Land is what we came up on.
Mm-hmm.
And then we stayed there, and we got on the boat, and I came back. To
so you came up
by Stern Wheeler.
Yeah.
But I wanted to make the trip across the Portage because it really was a very interesting trip. Some of those streams were so narrow, but evidently they were deep. But there was so much grass, you just were going through the grass.
What kind of was it a small vessel that you made the Portage in? Had to be.
Oh, yes, just a little open motor boat, that was all,
with
an engine on the back of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the chap who brought us over, and there were two native boys and this one man, and he was an Aleut, and he was supposed to be a Greek Orthodox church, but I understand that Matfi was, but he whenever they get the sacramental wine, he drank it all up, so I guess they sort of put him out of the church, you know.
I expect they had that problem with several
years. Yeah. It was funny. But anyway, it was a very interesting trip. And
how long did it take you to make that portage?
Oh, we must have been, at least, I would say 4 or 5 days on that
mm-hmm.
trip.
Mm-hmm.
Just out in the open boat, you know. And
then upriver on the Stern Wheeler was another.
That was about 2 days or 3 days mm-hmm. from down there.
Mm-hmm.
And we stopped, of course, along the way at the
villages. Yeah.
Uh-huh. It was an interesting trip. And I wanted to do it just because it would be the last time it would ever be done.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to fly up. So.
Then you came to Fairbanks then in 1933.
Yes.
Then you remained.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
in
and
Fairbanks.
We've been there ever since.
Yeah.
And I'd like to live there right now, Mike, really, but then it's just an expensive place when you're on a fixed income.
Yeah,
I would love to come back and stay. And I always hope that someday maybe something will happen that I can. I always say I started my life in Alaska and I'd like to end it.
Well, maybe you would consider coming back and staying at the Fairbanks Pioneers Home.
Well, Mike, I will someday, but as I say, right now I just
mm-hmm.
feel too out. And of course, I do have this family out there, and they've had seven children. It's been a very nice
yeah.
experience for me. And I feel that. You know, and they're all types. They have conservative ones, they have middle of the road, and they have hippie ones. And
yeah.
and they're all nice children, but, you know, have mm-hmm. their own way. And it's been a good education for me to be around mm-hmm. the youth because I don't,
mm-hmm.
I can see their viewpoint of a lot of things, too.
You've probably been pretty valuable to them, too.
Well, I've loved them, and they love me,
yeah.
and
mm-hmm.
I feel very blessed to have such a nice family.
Well, Clara Rust is with me this weekend, you know, here in Central.
Yes.
And she is 83, and I think she kind of pushes herself a little too much
uh-huh.
because she really is has problems with her. She has arthritis in
her
knees.
Her heart.
But she lives at the Pioneers Home, and her room is just like a cozy sitting room in a home.
Yes, I have seen it, and it is lovely.
And they are so thoughtful there with people, and if they want freedom, if they want to go downtown every day, now some of the men will go down, one man who passed away recently would go downtown every day to the pastime and play pan guinea or a little
isn't that nice,
pinochle,
yeah.
and some go down every day to pick up mail at his post office box or something. Some of them, like Clara, she works every day, not every day, but in the summer
she
at the museum.
She lives a busy life, yes.
And they're not confined at all.
Not a
there.
Bit.
You have a lot of freedom there.
I hope it always remains that way,
yeah,
too, Mike, because it's unusual to find that.
I think with the Pioneer Lodge in Fairbanks as interested in it as it is, as a matter of fact, they were the ones who managed to get the Pioneer Home built in Fairbanks. They lobbied for that for many years and worked very hard for that. Mm-hmm. And it didn't happen in just a matter of two or three years.
No, I know it didn't. I know it. Uh-huh.
And they take quite a pride in it. They have nothing to do with operation of it, but they're very proud of it.
And the whole town seems to do so much for it, Mike. Mm-hmm. I think it's wonderful. It's unusual to hear that in a town. Well, I'll tell you how I feel, Mike. I feel very fortunate that my life has been in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
I really do, and I think it's going to be a wonderful state when it, and it is.
It is now.
It is now. It is. It has every potential, though. To,
but you still come up every summer.
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And I love coming, and that's a reason I can, you know, enjoy being out there in the winter. I don't, especially, Sacramento is a nice place, but I'm just there because my family happens to be located there.
Yeah. If I...